the Financial Sense Lifetime Income Program. Now, here's the Financial Sense News Team, Jim Poplava and John Loeffler.
Hi, everyone. I'm Jim Poplava, and welcome to this week's edition of Lifetime Income.
Indeed, and I'm John Loeffler. Today's topic, retirement. Funny that, here on Lifetime Income. Retirement. But the question we ask is, can you afford it? Are you ready? And maybe the most important thing is, what will you do? Believe it or not, that contributes a lot towards your longevity, what you do inside retirement. So today we're going to do a special program examining the emotional and financial transition to a retired state. And we'll look at a lot of different elements to that. There's early retirement. There are corporate early retirement incentives. Getting fired is one of those.
Not the best one.
Not the best one, no. Hopefully they give you incentives to retire, which means they give you a boost into retirement financially. Retiring later than normal, and then the whole process of making the transition to retirement, what will it look like for you? I know Jim Carroll says that I will probably give up doing radio when they pry the microphone from my cold, dead hands, you know?
I had the same thing, John, and this is one of the issues I'm glad that we're going to be covering on the program. I had an opportunity to retire early back in 2003, took a month off from work, and quite honestly, I got bored. You start thinking, what am I going to do? You know, I don't want to go sailing 7 days a week or target shooting 7 days a week. I mean, so these are some of the issues that are really important that we want to cover here.
Right, or playing golf. I mean, we have family members that are retired, like in Sun City, Arizona. And when we go down to visit, I go, you know, this is fun for a day or two. But after that, what is it we're going to do here? You know, and the one thing all people need, Jim, they need purpose for their existence. And a lot of times people have lost this purpose in retirement. And that's why they choose to work longer or go back to work or work part-time. And it may not be a financial drive. It may be an emotional drive or a purpose-centered drive. Let's face it, there are 10,000 baby boomers retiring daily, 75 million boomers heading into retirement, which of course is going to be driving our ultimate crisis in Social Security if we don't fix that problem. The whole scene is changing right now, with 45% of those 65 and older in retirement. But a lot of people, as we've said, are choosing to work longer or they work shorter. In other words, they want to get out of the daily grind, but they want to do some purposeful work while they're here rather than, you know, it used to be, Jim, when you retired, you went out and you played golf forever and ever and ever, or did whatever you wanted to do, and life was happy. A lot of people found out that just wasn't true.
We've seen this, John, with a number of the experts that we've interviewed here on the program in the areas of health, that those individuals that have a purpose-driven retirement, either working, doing volunteer work, or even working longer before they retire, end up living longer. And the real issues that I think a lot of potential retirees face today, that let's say our parents didn't face, because John, our parents had something called like defined benefit pension plans that were guaranteeing when you retired from a company, you got 70-80% of your salary, you threw in Social Security. On top of that, people weren't worried about what they were going to live on in retirement. And then the other thing is, we've been adding 2 years to life expectancy every single decade. So people are living longer today. So the risk of retiring have never been higher. In fact, retirement is more unstable and unpredictable for a number of reasons. At the top of the list, as a number one worry of most people heading into retirement, is living long enough and outliving their assets. In other words, longevity. Another risk, having to work full or part-time in order to maintain your living standard. Avoiding something that we're all seeing, especially if you are on Medicare right now and you make over $70,000, you probably saw your Medicare premiums go up 22% in 2017. So avoiding escalating healthcare costs as a result of longevity. I mean, the longer you live, the more chances are your medical bills are going to go up. Also, covering your spouse's long-term care needs. What if one of you ends up in a long-term care facility? And then staying also, as you just mentioned, productive and engaged.
Well, let's try to answer that big number one question. Number one, when do you retire? And in order to make that decisive move, what are the criteria you have to look at in order to answer it?
Anybody that is facing retirement today, whether you're 5 years away from it, 10 years away from it, or you just stepped into retirement, there are three important questions. At the top of the list, can I afford it? In other words, can I afford to retire? Number two, how will my spouse or family members be affected? Because we'll talk about a couple case stories here that affect when somebody retires. It may affect a spouse in terms of benefits, in terms of health care. And number three, what does retirement mean to you? I mean, everybody has a different vision of what they want to do in retirement. One of my favorite retirement stories was Colonel Sanders, who started Kentucky Fried Chicken at the age of 65. Bored with life, had an idea, turned it into a national major corporation and national chain of restaurants. I mean, he started that at age 65. So the number one question I think everybody has to look at when you're thinking of retiring, can I afford it? And I hate to say this, you've heard us talk about this so many times on the program. It really gets down to creating a budget. And the only thing I would say about budget is throw out the rules of thumb, the conventional wisdom that says as long as your income is 70 to 80% of salary, I don't buy it. Number one, a retirement budget is going to be much different than a working budget. And let me just give you two examples that go away. When you retire, you're no longer paying 7.65% Social Security and Medicare tax on your salaried income. You're no longer contributing to a 401k. So if you're in the private sector and you're putting money away every month to a 401k plan, okay, that money goes away. If you have a salaried income, you're paying 7.65% Social Security and Medicare, and also 2.9 to 3.8 once you exceed a certain level of your Social Security base. And that's going to go away. Or if you're self-employed, that figure can come to 15.3% right off the top. That goes away when you're retired. And the other thing that I think you have to look at, if you were thinking of retiring or close to retirement, you need to break your retirement as we do when we're doing financial retirement plans. We break it up into three phases. And we call them the go-go phase, phase one of your retirement, the go-slow phase, the second phase of your retirement, and the no-go years, the third phase of your retirement. And let's just break this up and say that the average person at age 65 lives 19.3 years. Let's just round that off for 21 years. Actually, you can live longer than that, and we'll talk about that in just a minute. So the first 7 years are the go-go years. We call them the go-go years because that's when you start doing the stuff you never had time to do. You take that long vacation, 3 weeks to Europe or to Asia, go to China, to Australia, whatever you're going to do, hobbies that you pick up, more activities that you get involved in. That's what you do when you still have your health and you have that going for you. And you want to get the stuff done that you never had time to do when you were working. So let's call that the phase one period. You need to think of what those expenses are, and they're going to be much different. If you're traveling, you're going to spend more money on travel and discretion. Phase two is what I call the go slow years. And that is, well, you're still doing some of those things, but because of age and health, you're slowing it down a bit. I had a client that recently told me that he retired at age 65 and decided that he still wanted to do something. He was a doctor. He worked part-time from age 65 to 70 because he wanted to build up a larger retirement kitty, and also he had specific estate planning objectives. So at age 70, he retired. He had to start drawing on his pension in the first 5 years of his retirement. Now he has a daughter. Her husband is in the oil business and works overseas. So the first 5 years of the retirement, they were taking two or three trips a year, long trips. And he just came back from a trip, and now he's 77. And he basically said, you know what? I asked him, you take any more trips? And he says, no. He says, the last trip, it took us 2 or 3 days to recover from jet lag. So he is in what I call his second phase of retirement, which is go slow. And then the third phase of retirement, that's, you know, you start getting into your late 80s. I have clients in their 90s. You don't do the traveling. You don't do the things that you used to do because of age restrictions. And your expenses are going to be much different. They're going to be a lot more in phase one when you're doing travel and hobbies. Those expenses will be reduced in phase two, the go slow years. And then they're going to increase in phase three, the no-go years, when you're spending more on medical. The possibility of long-term care is a possibility. I mean, there's a number of studies that have estimated how much the average couple, age 65, will spend on out-of-pocket expenses. These are expenses that Medicare and your insurance aren't going to cover, $220,000. So let's say you're going to live 20 years, you need to budget $10,000 to $12,000, put that in your retirement budget, because you need to have that money saved up, because you will need it throughout your retirement. And, you know, some people, John, live much, much longer than the standard 20 years. Some people live 30 years or more. I have a lot of clients today that are in retirement homes that are in their 90s.
So the first question, of course, is obviously, can I afford it? And then question number two is, how is this all going to affect spouse and family? Sometimes people retire and they drive the rest of the family nuts because they're in a role reversal type situation. I've seen that happen before, where it's like, what happened to this guy or this lady? You know, and sometimes it's the kids even, you know, if the parents retire early.
Well, the second one is, will my spouse or family members be affected? In other words, a question that comes up, if something happens to me, what happens to my spouse? Will they continue to receive the same level of income? We know if a husband and wife are on Social Security, the surviving spouse, in most cases, which will be the wife, can either take her Social Security or her husband's, whichever is larger. But the fact you lose a spouse, you lose one Social Security paycheck. If you retire early, for example, you could lose benefits that you have from the company. And I'll give you an example. We'll call this couple Jim and Janet. Janet is age 61. She's contemplating retirement next year, just as soon as she qualifies for Social Security benefits at age 62. Her husband, Jim, is age 63, did the same thing when he reached that age, but Jim lost his company healthcare plan when he retired and was dependent coverage on his wife's plan. But when Janet retires, she will be age 62. That's 3 years away from Medicare. Jim is 2 years away from Medicare. So they are going to have to find a supplemental medical plan to kick in as a result of Jan retiring, because Jim was a dependent on Jan's healthcare policy until he turns age 65. This is just one example that comes to mind. The other one is the impact of inflation, especially with women as surviving beneficiaries. You know, most living survivors on Social Security today are women. And as I mentioned, longevity. At age 65, the average lifespan is 19.3, and that number is going up. One out of four of you will live at age 65. One out of four of you will live past 90. And one out of 10 of you will live past age 95. And the Employee Benefit Research Institute, we talked about this study on the program last year, estimates that individuals born between 1948 and 1975, 44% of those individuals will run short of cash in retirement for one spouse. And it's basically because of these longevity rules. And from a planning perspective, what are some of the things you can do to counteract that? Well, number one, we've talked about the show, is you postpone retirement. Instead of retiring at age 66, which is the full retirement age, or 67, you work beyond that. You don't retire at age 62 as many people used to. Or number two, an option is you plan for part-time retirement. Maybe you find a second career and you work part-time. And number three, which is always an option, we're seeing this, reducing your lifestyle expectations. We're seeing a lot of what I call tax and lifestyle inversions, where people move from expensive states like New York, California, Hawaii. They move to less expensive states like Arizona, Nevada, or some other states in the Midwest, where the cost of living and the taxes are much cheaper. So this is an alternative that you can pursue. And the one thing that, you know, I would suggest, if you are in that pre-retirement mode, a checklist of pre-retirement items. Number one on that checklist is your personal financial information. That's a net worth statement, a cash flow statement, a budget, spousal income, spousal's retirement date. As I just mentioned in the case of Jim and Jan, Jim retired early and was dependent on Jan's medical coverage as a dependent. Number two on the checklist, employer-sponsored plans, the type of plan, the vesting, the spousal benefits, the survivor benefits. Number three on your checklist, Social Security, your estimated benefit, your spouse's estimated benefit, and also the benefits of waiting or delaying from taking retirement benefits, because once you reach retirement age, the longer that you postpone that, it goes up 8% a year until age 70. And then lifestyle and related type questions that people have to take. So these are just some of the items that are affected by you when you make that decision to retire.
Okay, so you do get to this big point and you still say all of the other things notwithstanding, I've satisfied those questions. Now, what does my retirement look like? Oh, I hadn't thought about that.
You know, it's a rather interesting one because it is just as important as the question, financially, can you afford to retire? What does your retirement look like? For example, where do you want to live? You want to live where you are now with your friends, community. Maybe you lived in a home that was close to work. Now that you're no longer working, do you want to live somewhere else? Do you want to live closer to your kids or grandkids? I just had a client that had retired, what was it, 10, 12 years ago? And most of his kids, his two kids, especially where his grandchildren are in another state, he's in that final third phase of retirement, I call it the no-go, because of health issues. And he has made the decision to move to another state, get a bigger home where he can have his children and especially his grandchildren that he wants to spend a lot of time with rather than traveling. So where do you want to live? How do you see yourself spending time in retirement? What are you going to do with all this free time? How much do you plan to travel and see family members? As in the case of this client, he was spending so much time taking trips back to see his kids and his grandchildren, he finally made the decision, you know what, we're just going to move there. And another question, do you want to make major changes such as starting a business? Colonel Sanders, good example. Getting a degree, going back to school, remodeling your home. And it was interesting because there was a study that was done by MetLife in terms of reasons for early retirement, and there were three big ones. Health was 23% of the reason people retired early. Laid off or downsize was 22% of the reason that people basically retired early. Job stress, 19%, was another reason. Think of police officers or immediate responders. So, I mean, that's over two-thirds right there. Reasons for retiring later, 58% said they couldn't make up the financial losses. Think of the boomers that faced two bear markets, the bursting of the tech bubble in 2000 and the great financial crisis in 2007. That was 58%. Writing out current economic situation, 53%. We did a show, and we're going to do another one because we think in the next couple of years, there's a high likelihood that we're going to be facing a recession here if the Fed continues hiking interest rates. And we talked about that on the weekend show. But you're in the middle of a recession. The stock market's down. Things have happened to your investment portfolio. The assets that you thought you were going to have to retire aren't there. So it's just a good example of the number of reasons why people take early retirement or late retirement.
So basically, you are in one of three brackets here. You're either in early retirement, that can either be forced or planned, and or section two here, incentivized. Some corporations want people to retire, so they give you some incentive to leave. And then there's late retirement. So basically, you're in one of those three brackets.
All right, let's begin with early retirement. As I mentioned, in one of the three top reasons people retire early, health, laid off, downsize, or job stress. Some of the disadvantages that immediately pop up, if you retire early, number one, that's fewer years that you were accumulating and putting away assets to live off of. And number two, the earlier you retire, the more years you're going to have to draw on those assets. If you retire at age 65, average lifespan, let's round it off to 20 years. Well, what if you retire at age 55? Now, you're going to have to live off those assets for 30 years. So there's a real big difference. The other thing is, if you retire early, you may have reduced pension benefits. You could find yourself, in the case of Jen and Jan, where you don't have health care benefits covered, so you're going to have to go out and purchase a health insurance policy. Another thing that happens, if you retire early and you apply for Social Security, you're going to get less in Social Security if you take it at age 62 versus full retirement age of 66 or age 70, where it goes up 8% a year. Now, in forced retirement, where in this case the company lays you off due to a recession, due to a merger, a number of reasons that that happens, there's two primary concerns associated with a forced early retirement. The first and most obvious is you just lost your income. You're losing that salary, which, you know, basically you're going to be retired for more years and have fewer resources. A second reason is you have to think about health. A final consideration is, you know, it could be health of a spouse. Let's say you need the income, but the stress of the job caused an individual, I can think of one client that had to retire because they had a heart attack. And the doctor said, you're in a high stress environment. You continue to work, you're not going to live long. And so those are things that come up. And, you know, loss of income and health have become major issues. And the other thing that you have when you retire early, there's all kinds of tax laws in terms of penalties. For example, if you take a distribution from an IRA, a 401k, KEO, or similar type plans before age 59 and a half, there is a 10% early withdrawal penalty. Now, there's exceptions to this. Once you reach the age of 59 and a half, there's the death of the owner, there's a disability, it's a quadro as a result of a divorce, qualified higher education expenses. There's a way to get around the 10% penalty with annuity payments, first-time home purchase, unreimbursed medical expenses, health insurance, or separation after service at age 55. And we don't have time to cover everything, but there are some tax rules that can help you get around this. One of them is IRS Rule 72T, which allows you to take periodic payments prior to age 59 and a half. There's a restriction. You must do it for 5 years and must continue until age 59 and a half. And that will allow you to avoid that 10% penalty. You can also take a loan, for example, if you feel that you might be able to pay off. And let's say you get downsized, you get laid off, and rather than cashing out and paying the penalty, I mean, if you take of the taxes, the average person is in a 30% tax bracket. Here in California, you're 9.3. 30 plus 9.3, add the 10% penalty. The government is going to take half of that in the form of taxes. So some solutions sometimes, if your plan allows it, is to take a temporary loan until you get another job, and then you pay it back. And so as we talk about early retirement, there's one other thing I want to cover that's real key here and pay attention to. There are certain laws that come into effect at different ages. At age 50, if you're contributing to an IRA or a 401k plan, there's a catch-up provision, an extra $1,000 on an IRA, an extra $6,000 on a 401k. We just had a doctor client that came in complaining about her taxes. And we found out going through the plan that she wasn't using the extra catch-up provision of $6,000 that the hospital had that she worked at. Age 55 is another key age. You can withdraw from 401k funds if terminated of employment and occurs after age 55 without a penalty. Age 59 and a half, you can withdraw from your IRA without penalty. Age 62 is the earliest you can claim Social Security. Age 65 is another key age because you are now eligible for Medicare. Age 66 And age 67 is when full retirement benefits are available from Social Security, meaning you can take Social Security and work and not lose your Social Security benefits as a result of working. Age 70 comes into play because the postponement of Social Security for the 8% increase stops at age 70. And at age 70 and a half, you must begin mandatory distributions from your pension plan. The only exception to that is Roth IRAs. So these are just a number of things, and it's why we encourage you to have yourself a retirement plan, because just think of those ages I just mentioned, all the things that come into effect and all the different tax rules, because corporations have different rules, the IRS has different rules, so there's all kinds of rules that come into play here.
Okay, let's move on to corporations. Sometimes when they want to downsize workforce, or let's face it, the people who've been with the company make more money than the people coming in, they give you an incentive to leave early. Sometimes the packages are good. Sometimes it's sort of paltry. But how does that function then?
Well, there are a number of reasons companies do this. It's a way for providing openings for new hires. It's a way to reallocate staffing to better satisfy the changing needs of the business, reduce payroll expenses. A new hire may be less expensive. California did this back in the year 2000. They were trying to reduce, California was running a big budget deficit, so they came up with an early retirement incentive package for teachers. Now, some of these plans are called open window plans, and basically they're called open window because they're only open for a period of time, usually 3 to 6 weeks, during which eligible employees can choose to accept or reject the offer. Once that time has elapsed, the window shuts. And sometimes people regret taking that offer because the company is doing this for a reason. They're probably downsizing. And so they're saying, well, rather than fire people, what we'll do is we'll create an early incentive option so we can reduce the workforce. I've seen a lot of people that have rejected that, the offer, and then end up a couple years later and they're actually downsized. Typical window plans have things that the company gives you, cash benefits, some kind of severance benefits. They may continue your health care coverage, which could be a major issue for you because if the company had been picking up your health care plans, they may give you access to early retirement benefits or deferred compensation. They may even change the rules in which you are vested. So there's all kinds of ways that they're going to offer and try to make this very attractive to you. They may enhance your pension benefits. Now, there's a couple of things you can do. First of all, if you receive your pension benefits in a lump sum, they can be rolled over to an IRA. So an IRA rollover, you can defer taxation. Secondly, here's the good thing about it. Whatever that is, that's not subject to Social Security, Medicare taxes. Now, the amount of what they can compensate you is limited by IRS Rule 415, which limits the annual benefit at age 62 to $210,000 in 2016. I'm not sure what the 2017 figure is. And that limit is reduced if paid prior to age 62. Also, the amount of compensation that could be used in the calculation of pension benefits is limited to $265,000. There are other benefits, like they may want to pre-retirement counseling and other kinds of things that companies may do. They may extend your life insurance or disability packages. So that's one form. That's called open window. And whether you do that, believe it or not, this can be quantified because you can do calculations, what we call present value calculations, where you actually can take a look at and quantify it and say, does this make sense? There's other things such as golden parachute plans. The problem with some of these is they're usually given to a lot of top executives. There is a limit to 2 to 3 times your annual compensation. There's a 20% excise tax and anything above that, and it's also non-deductible to corporation. The payments qualified, there's a little bit of difference here if the payments are made to a qualified plan. Then we have, instead of the golden parachute, we have what is called the tin parachute, which is for most middle-class individuals, not the top execs. The rules have limits in terms of lump sum installments. The present value cannot be more than 3 times your 5-year average pay. And severance payments can begin at age 55. Also, deductions are limited to $1 million for individuals. So there are a number of plans and rules that come in. What I'm trying to get across, if you're listening to this program and you find yourself in this situation, there is a lot of planning that needs to be going into this decision, whether you're getting a severance package, whether you're getting an early retirement open window plan. And you really need to take a look at and maybe have the company, if you work for a public company. You know, I can remember one case that we worked on where we encouraged the individual to take the early retirement package because we took a look at the company finances. It was a public company. And I go, what they're trying to do right now is let go of guys like you to encourage you. But if things continue to go the way they are with the company, you could find yourself being let go and not having these benefits. So you really need to understand the situation at your company when you are offered that.
Now, because of changes in the culture, so many people are delaying retirement, hoping to build up Social Security benefits and possibly other things, or possibly they're just not ready to do it.
You know, it was interesting because you wouldn't have seen this maybe 2 decades ago, but 40% of men age 65 are still working today. And there's, you know, all kinds of reasons as a retirement option. We call it Plan B of delaying retirement. Number one, economic and market conditions have reduced the size of portfolios. 2 bear markets, as I mentioned, the bear market at the beginning of the millennium with the bursting of the tech bubble and, of course, the Great Recession. Second reason, you need to retain company-provided health benefits. Maybe you have a health condition. The company medical plan is covering that. It may not be as affordable if you go on Medicare. And in other words, you're going to have to pay for your Medicare benefits, especially for your supplemental plan, and depending on what your income is, you could end up paying more. Lack of savings or the presence of a lot of debt. Maybe you had a second mortgage on the home you took out to take care of the kids' education. Some people have anxiety, John, about too much free time. Like, well, what do I do? And then also choosing to continue work because, you know, like I had a client, a doctor, where they closed their medical practice and he was age 65 and he goes, I like what I'm doing. I don't want to retire. So he found a part-time employment, which allowed him to roll over his pension into an IRA, let it compound for another 5 years. And that extra income allowed him to travel and do things in what I call the go-go years that he was able to do by part-time work. And the other thing that we have found with so many of our medical experts on the program here is, assuming that you're more productive, that means the more you work, that's fewer years you're going to have to be drawing down on assets to support your retirement. And also, you're going to have more years to accumulate. It's interesting because they're saying that the number of men that will continue to work after age 65 has been going up several percentage points every single decade. And one of the reasons is longevity. We're living longer. We're staying healthier. The other reason is, you know, let's think about retirement plans. One of the biggest mistakes we see being made today is taking your Social Security benefits at age 62. Think of this, folks. By delaying your Social Security benefits from age 62 to age 70, your Social Security benefit is going to be 76% higher. I can't think of anything that you're doing in your 401k plan. And if you've been reading some of the stories I've been writing on feast or famine, or some of the other stories I've been writing lately about what the next 10 years looks like, I don't know of any other kind of guarantee that you can get in the open markets that will be doing you as much good as, for example, delaying your Social Security benefits because they go up nearly 8% a year. Now, the other thing that also happens, though, you do get to the point at age 70 and a half where you are going to be required to take minimum distributions from your IRA. Because if you don't, let's say that you were supposed to take a distribution of $10,000 and you didn't take it, there is a 50% tax penalty in addition to the income taxes. So you're going to owe $5,000 to the IRS for failure to do so. And this is one of the reasons I encourage people to sort of consolidate your IRAs into one IRA, because you often forget about, I had $20,000 at that mutual fund company or that brokerage account. We had a client that got caught up with the penalty. Their accountant said, you're a penalty. Why? Well, they forgot to account for a small mutual fund holding that they had elsewhere they completely forgot about. So this is also very important.
Yeah, now we're down to the bottom question. You know, what is retirement going to be? What will it look like? It's going to be different for every single person.
You know, this is one of the big things that are out there that affect a lot of people. We had one client I can think of, and this was a sad case. This happened early on in my career. Very high D-oriented, driven personality type corporate executive. And he got an early retirement because basically his company was merged, bought out by another company. So he was basically forced into retirement. And John, he became literally sort of a couch potato, just kind of shriveled. All his contacts, his social life, everything was built around running the company that he was running, and, you know, socialization at work, the Christmas parties, the different conferences and that he did in his work. And all of a sudden, that was taken away from him, and that was basically his life. And to make a long story short, he lived 5 years after retirement and passed away early. So this is something to consider. And there's two books I'd like to recommend that you read, and they're very positive. One is called Life Reimagined, Discovering Your New Life Possibilities by Richard Leader and Alan Weber, Redefining the Golden Years. And then another book is called How to Retire Happy, Wild, and Free by Ernie Zelinsky. And it gives you a little bit more insight. You know, we're seeing the most productive clients that we have seen and the healthiest are those that have sort of purpose-driven retirement. They have found a need, and you'll see this in one of the case studies that we'll be talking about, but it also contributes to happiness. It contributes to longevity. It contributes to good health, all of these things. And you really need to define that because, you know, if you're working a busy schedule, you're working 40 hours a week, you're working 50, 60 hours a week. I don't know what your schedule is. All of a sudden, you're not working 40, 50, 60 hours a week. What are you going to do with that time? How are you going to spend it? Do you have hobbies? Will your socialization, your friendships change if they're built all around work? How much of that will change? Where will you live? What will you be doing? And do you have something you always wanted to do, but you never did during your lifetime? Like, you know, one of the things I'd love to do and I'm considering is doing some teaching. I used to teach retirement classes, and with a little bit more free time, of course, I'm not retired. I, you know, like you, John, I'll work to the day I pass on because I love what I do. But one of the things that I've thought of doing is taking, you know, 36, 37 years of experience and knowledge and teach, because I started out to be a history teacher when I started college, and something I love. And that's what you have to think about in retirement. What will you do? What will your retirement look like? So hopefully some of the things that we covered today are going to help you on that checklist of thinking about this. And this is stuff you should be doing 5 years, 10 years prior to retirement. And you need to have a plan B, because in this kind of workforce that we have seen, there are a lot of unplanned retirements that can change your life dramatically, downsizing at companies. And folks, we're going to be heading into recession, in my opinion, in the next year or two. I hate to say it, Donald Trump, the Federal Reserve, the government has not repealed the business cycle. And we know in a recession, a couple things happen. Companies downsize, unemployment goes up, and we also end up in a bear market, means the value of assets decline in value. So that's why I would encourage you as you begin this year, in this first day of February, to start thinking about putting together a retirement plan so you can start thinking through these things and don't find yourself all of a sudden waking up and say, oh my God, I just got laid off, or not thinking through clearly, you get an early retirement incentive, not understanding the financial condition of your company, because it may be a good deal for you. It may not be a good deal if you don't accept it later on when the company decides, well, you know what? Sorry, we have to downsize our workforce.
And coming up tomorrow on Lifetime Income, Paul Horn is our guest. He's a certified financial planner. The topic, passing assets to your heirs, and also why wealth doesn't make it beyond the second or third generation. It's really important because if you spend all the time putting something together and then it just sort of disappears over the course of a couple of generations, maybe you didn't do what you should have done in terms of planning correctly. Now it's time for our real life study here on the program. Our real life study is based on someone's real life experience, and we change the names of the people to protect their privacy, but it goes to illustrate the subjects we've been discussing here on the program, obviously today, talking about the various stages of retirement transition. So we're going to look at that. And also, there are slides on our website at financialsense.com, which illustrate the principles being discussed here during this part of the program.
This is the case of Connie Schultz. Connie is age 64. She hopes to retire within the next few years, given the longevity, especially on her parents' side. Her mom lived well to the age of 98. Her life expectancy is 95, moderately conservative, like all potential retirees. She wants income with capital preservation. Give you a little bit background on Connie. She is age 63. She's an attorney. She's been a long-standing attorney, has been very successful, but has found the job more difficult in recent years, despite the fact she enjoys actually what she does. Her friends are mostly retired, and the stress, long hours, travel have begun to take their toll. She knows she'll need to retire soon, but is unsure what to do next. She has always thought of retirement as going to pasture. It's kind of like, okay, I'm no longer productive. And she's really not sure what she'll do with herself in retirement. She has friends. She enjoys travel, but is not someone who wants to devote time to a hobby or charity work like many of her retired friends. She's concerned about being able to maintain the same lifestyle in retirement and limiting the amount of taxes that she'll have to pay. Now, what was important to Connie? Establishing a plan. Basically, hey, can I retire? What will it look like? What are my taxes? Am I going to be able to maintain my standard of living? And probably very important for somebody as productive and successful as she's been, what am I going to do in retirement? And then, of course, managing taxes. Now, looking at Connie's budget, roughly essentials, $58,000, discretionary, about $13,000, so about $71,000 a year. A salary of $107,000, surplus of about $36,000, so she's obviously putting money away. That retirement budget gets reduced from around close to $58,000 down to $50,000. However, with a little extra travel, discretionary gets bumped up to $16,000 from $12,000. So the budget doesn't drop down too much. It drops down from about $71,000 to a little over almost $67,000. Her Social Security will be $29,000. Pension will be $32,000, a shortfall of roughly $5,500. If you take a look at her net worth, her primary residence, $600,000, mainly paid for. Her retirement assets were $689,000. Her taxable investments were $212,000. In cash was $150,000. So total investment assets, roughly about a little over $1,050,000. Liabilities, basically some purchases she recently made, which would be paid off. So Connie's financial plan challenges is really, in her case, preparing her mentally for the challenges of retirement, because she did like what she was doing. The travel, I think it was probably the excess travel that was probably causing a little bit more of the stress. Creating a retirement plan, lowering exposure to taxes, and managing cash flow during retirement. Now, going back, she had $32,000 coming in from pension, $29,000 from Social Security. We did a balanced investment portfolio, a combination between individual bonds. And one of the reasons I stress, because she's coming out of a sort of a 401k program, is we're in a rising interest rate environment. And I said, Connie, you can't go into bonds because there are no maturities. If we go into individual bonds, which was something new for her, the nice thing about this is you're not going to lose money. If you own a bond that matures in 3 years, you put $10,000 in that bond, you're going to get $10,000 back. More importantly, with the Fed raising interest rates, as bonds mature, because we proposed a laddered bond portfolio, as each bond matures, as interest rates go up, you can invest the proceeds into a higher paying bond now that interest rates are up. It's hard to believe, folks, but less than a year ago, the yield on a 2-year treasury note was like 0.3%. Today it's 1.2%. It is up almost fourfold from where it was last summer. So the idea of a laddered bond portfolio as interest rates rise, as the Fed continues, and on the day that we're doing this podcast, there wasn't a major change, but the Fed announced that they continue to see raising interest rates. In other words, they're not stopping. They're not done. So in a rising interest rate environment, the advantage of individual bonds, you can capture the rise in interest rates and you don't have to worry about losses as you would in a bond fund or a bond ETF. So basically, in a balanced bond portfolio and stock portfolio for the taxable accounts and a retirement account, and then we kept $50,000 in cash for emergency purposes, her investment income would be $31,000, total income of $92,000 against roughly about $67,000 in expenses, leaving over almost close to $27,000 in surplus. The main strategy here, we recommended that she retire in 12 to 18 months. Although she can retire today, as we went through this process, she wasn't psychologically ready to make that leap into retirement. So we reminded her that retirement is merely the opportunity to pursue one's passions in life. So she really liked the idea of starting a business. So we advised that Connie develop a business plan, think about what it would be, the capital that required, and how much time. Because as she said, I'm just not going to sit around the house, play golf, or spend all my time in travel or charity work. I want to do something. She's just a high energy person. We also recommended she create a bucket list of items to accomplish before she retires. Things like, for example, offering a local charity her expertise as an accomplished lawyer, or going and starting a small business of her own. In terms of lowering taxes, we used Roth conversions to reduce her RMD distributions exposure, especially since we anticipate if she starts a business, she will have additional income, which means higher taxes. Remember, she's single, so she goes into a higher tax bracket on a lower level of income. We also recommended that she put together a budget so that we could adequately piece together a plan to meet her specific income needs, and especially a business plan. In other words, what amount of capital it was going to require from her assets to fund this business and keep it funded and make sure she was solvent and liquid. And so basically, John, this was a case where the biggest issue here was, what am I going to do in retirement? What is retirement going to look at? And Connie had a lot of her friends that were retired. And even though, you know, they were good friends, she didn't see herself spending her retirement in the same way. So it was putting together a productive use of her time, being a very, very accomplished and high energy individual.
Yep, and probably enjoying it at the same time, which is the most important part there. Okay, coming up again tomorrow on the program, Paul Horn, certified financial planner, passing assets to your heirs, and why wealth doesn't make it past the second or third generation. All of that tomorrow on Lifetime Income. Anything else in the future we should be watching, Jim?
Well, I think the key thing is going to be coming up here. You know, as we talked about on the weekend program, John, this is the year to expect the unexpected. And I can't think of a time in my investment career that so much of what may happen in the markets is driven politically. And politically, I mean, what will the Trump administration do? What kind of laws will be passed? Will he be successful in lowering taxes, increasing stimulus, the things that he wants to do with his agenda, versus what will the Fed do? And as we mentioned on the weekend program, Fed has more control over what's going to happen with the recession, because every recession since World War II has been caused by a Fed rate raising cycle. And it's not a precise science. It's not like they can say, okay, we do 6 rate cuts and we get a soft landing and it's perfect. It doesn't happen that way. Usually you crash and burn. And that's what happens. They over tighten, and it's always in hindsight they can look back and say, That was one interest rate too far, because it takes time for these rate hikes and monetary tightening to work their way through the economy. It happens subtly. And then one day we wake up and we go, oh my gosh, we're in a recession. But the stock market will tell you long before that. So these, I think, are going to be some of the big issues this year. I can't think of a more politically driven market year with the change in administration, not just here, but in Europe. We've got three upcoming elections that are going to be very important to determine what's going to happen to Europe. So it is going to be a politically, economically driven year for the markets ahead. But we'll be here to talk about it, and I hope you will as well. In the meantime, on behalf of John Loeffler and myself, we'd like to thank you for joining us here on Lifetime Income. Until you and I talk again, we hope you have a pleasant week.
You can subscribe to Financial Sense NewsHour in the iTunes and BlackBerry podcast libraries or at feeds.feedburner.com/FSM. Find more information about our guests at www.financialsense.com/newshour. Friend us at www.facebook.com/financialsenseonline. For our on-the-go listeners, you can access Financial Sense on your mobile device at m.financialsense.com. The Financial Sense NewsHour is for informational and educational purposes only and should not be considered as a solicitation or offer to purchase or sell any securities. The investments, investment strategies, and investment philosophies discussed or presented on the NewsHour each involve their own unique risk factors, which are not discussed on the show. Responses to listener inquiries are based on the personal opinions of James Poplava and do not take into account listeners' suitability, objectives, or risk tolerance. Financial Sense NewsHour and its parent company shall not be liable for any financial losses that result from investing in any companies profiled on or advertising with Financial Sense, or arising out of the use of any material on the NewsHour. Be advised that you invest at your own risk.